Welcome to Uncut, a special edition of the Conversations podcast by Texas Scorecard, where we're sitting down with real candidates running for statewide office and asking them real questions, unfiltered. You can find more at texasscorecard.com.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard. Today, we're joined with Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who is running for re-election. Attorney General Paxton, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, glad to be here today. Thanks for having me.
So you have served as the state's top lawyer for two terms now, and you're seeking a third. For folks who don't know you, who don't know what you've done in your time in office, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell folks kind of why you're seeking four more years in the seat.
Yeah, so I was in the Texas Senate and the Texas House. I ran from the Texas Senate, and the reason that I ran was I looked at the landscape at the time. It was President Obama, and at that time, Texas and other states were having to sue him a lot for overstepping his constitutional role. And I looked at the landscape and didn't feel like the people that were running would do the same type of job that had been done before and needed to be done. And I felt like we were at a crossroads in our country. So I ran, and we ended up suing President Obama 27 times in 27 months, which seemed like a lot at the time, and until now. And honestly, I thought Trump was doing such a good job. I thought he'd be reelected. And I didn't think we'd have to deal with these same types of issues. We were dealing with other issues, state issues, but we didn't have as many federal issues. And we were getting a lot of cooperation from the Trump administration, and we were working with them on a lot of issues. And that relationship really, I think, was helpful to Texas, and I think it was helpful to him and to the country. So when Biden won and immediately on day one said that he was no longer going to enforce immigration law, we sued him on day three, and we got an injunction on day six. I think that is the fastest lawsuit against a sitting president and an injunction in the history of the country. And unfortunately, it hasn't gotten any better. We're, I think, involved right now in 25 different lawsuits. And so for me, it was, I've done this before. I have experience doing it. I feel like we're at a crossroads and a crisis point in our country where if we don't keep our country now, and there's a risk of losing it, that we've lost it all for good. And if Texas turns and we're not in the middle of this fight, I feel like the country's going to be lost. And so I didn't feel like it was the right time for me to step away, given the fact that I have this experience. I know what I'm doing. I've done this for several years, and it just doesn't seem like the if there is somebody running against me, it's not the right person or the right time.
You talked about the lawsuits you've had against the Biden administration. What are some of the highlights of those right now and where they are in the process?
So there's all kinds. I mean, we've had to defend because they've come in and sued us trying to take away money that rightfully belongs to the state of Texas. Like, they tried to cut our Medicaid funding by multiple billions of dollars, and we were able to stop that. We sued him over the Keystone Pipeline. That's still in litigation because we don't think he had the authority to undo what had already been done. I think some of the major lawsuits have been over immigration. We've got seven of those. We stopped him initially from the deportations, but then he continued to use the Eliminate the Remain in Mexico program and the laws related to that. We sued him over that. And we were successful in getting an injunction. We've been successful in going all the way to the Supreme Court. And now we're probably going to enforce it because not only are they ignoring federal law, but they're also ignoring injunctions from courts. So we have a president that's completely out of control. And, you know, we're spending a lot of time filing these lawsuits. We also have a lot of vaccine mandate cases. We've got, I think, five of those now. We just filed another one this week on the National Guard and the Texas Guard. We got an injunction on the Head Start program New Year's Eve. We got the first nationwide injunction on the employer one that was over 100. And that one now is going to the U.S. Supreme Court on January 7th. Actually, it's coming up. And so, you know, it's almost an everyday occurrence for us to either be involved in some type of filing against the Biden administration.
You mentioned the COVID vaccine mandates, and that's something we've seen kind of make its way through the court, and Supreme Court's hearing that and all that. When you look at COVID mandates in Texas specifically, right now we've got executive orders from the governor that ban mask mandates, that ban vaccine mandates. But of course, just, you know, a year or so ago, the mandates were closing down businesses. They were implementing mask mandates. Do you think that it's appropriate for the governor to exercise that kind of executive authority?
So, you know, I think that's a theoretical question that the legislature has to deal with. That's a legislative question, and a lot of people don't understand my job. I'm in an interesting job as far as lawyers go. I don't pick my clients. my clients are given to me by law, by the statutes, by the Constitution. And so my job is to represent the state the best I can, represent the governor, represent the agencies. And, you know, the reality is I have lots of agencies I represent, lots of individuals that I'm required to represent by law. And, you know, other lawyers pick their clients. They say, no, yes, I don't pick my clients. Mm-hmm. So I'm in an interesting spot where I have to represent my clients. And unless they're doing something that is clearly outside of the law, we have to find a way to work inside of our responsibility, fiduciary, statutory, and constitutional role, while maybe sometimes we don't always agree with everything that's occurring. So, you know, I think it's the role of the legislature to figure out what power they're going to give the governor under those statutes. And my job is to do my best to implement whatever, you know, the legislature says I'm supposed to do.
You raise an interesting question. Your background as a legislator, too, can maybe give some insight into this. Why do you think it is that the legislature's been hesitant to act on that issue?
And when you say act on that issue,
act on reining in some of the executive authority.
You know, I think it's complicated. I think, you know, you've got some that maybe want to do that. You've got others that clearly don't want to do that. You've got the whole Republican-Democrat issue and how that would play into confining, you know, governor's power, not specifically this one, but just in general, governor, the governor's power of Texas. And I think they're just, you would have to have a majority in both houses. And, you know, for some reason, you know, they haven't gotten to that.
Different question here. Recently, you had the Court of Criminal Appeals say essentially that the Office of the Attorney General can't investigate, can't go after election fraud cases. Assuming you disagree with that ruling.
I would consider it the worst ruling in my lifetime in Texas, and the most devastating. It is a incredible ruling. The powers of the Attorney General come from the Constitution. And what Article 4, Section 22 of the Constitution provides is that the Attorney General is to represent the state in front of the Supreme Court, that we are to make sure that corporations do not commit fraudulent actions and to pursue corporations that do. We are to issue opinions that are requested by the governor and other office holders in Texas. And finally, to do such things as are required by law. Well, that's where I think the court missed it. In 1951, pursuant to that particular last provision, as those things required by law, the legislature passed, this is before my lifetime and before yours, they passed a statute that said that the Attorney General would prosecute voter fraud. That has been done since, you know, 1951 with no problem from any court ever. And it was probably done because a lot of local DAs may not want to get into political ramifications of prosecuting voter fraud in their own districts. So it makes sense from a policy standpoint. It makes sense from a constitutional standpoint because there is a provision that allows for that. And it turns out that the Court of Criminal Appeals has upheld that, and so has, and for your listeners, the Court of Criminal Appeals is the highest court related to criminal matters. And then the Texas Supreme Court is our highest court for civil matters. Kind of unusual because we have two different courts that are sort of Supreme Court. So a lot of people get confused. Well, so it's both courts have upheld this in the past. So for this Court of Appeals to wait for the filing deadline to pass, 2 days after the filing deadline, interesting timing in my opinion, to then strike down a statute that's been in place since 1951 that's been used literally hundreds and hundreds of times and overrule the legislature is shocking and devastating because now the timing is very interesting. You have local DAs who have been put in place by Soros in various counties, including Travis, including Bexar County, including potentially Harris, Dallas, there's no chance they're going to prosecute voter fraud. And so now anybody that wants to commit voter fraud, according to the Criminal Court of Appeals, would have to be prosecuted by a local DA, which is not going to happen, which means, in my opinion, we are at serious risk of losing the state very quickly.
What needs to happen to undo that? Is it a constitutional amendment? Is it a court decision?
No, I don't think a constitutional, I mean, we could try to pass a constitutional amendment. You're not going to get, the Democrats are going to vote for it. Genius move, in my opinion, genius move. If you're planning this, Soros was, let's say he was planning the whole thing, you would plan it just this way. Now, whether he planned this part of it, I don't know, but he planned the DA part of it, and this is genius. Wait till the filing deadline's over. These guys cannot be challenged now. It's going to affect the next election, maybe a lot. And we don't need a constitutional provision. There's already a provision in the Constitution that says that such other things as are required by law. Now, they point to a provision that says the DAs are to prosecute criminal matters, but there is not a conflict there. There is, yes, they are to prosecute. It doesn't say that they necessarily have exclusive jurisdiction if the legislature uses that other section of the Constitution. And so we're going to appeal again. We're going to ask for a motion for rehearing. We're going to help them get it right. And if they don't, we're going to have to figure out some way, whether it's a special session, to create civil authority where we have the ability to sue people for massive damages if they commit fraud, whether it's the AG's office or individuals, much like the heartbeat bill, or we go back and pass another statute that says the AG can definitely do this and we're going to add on more authority to prosecute voter fraud. But we can't let this stand, or I promise you, this is the backdoor way that no one's paying attention to because no one understands the criminal court of appeals. Very few people, the DAs do, but very few people understand what this decision has done and how devastating it could be for the state.
How do people understand if this decision was not made, what kind of activities does the Office of the Attorney General get involved in when it comes to going after election fraud cases?
Okay, so,
investigation as well?
Yeah, there's all kinds. I mean, so we have different aspects of this. We have currently several hundred cases we're investigating. Now, when I came into the office, we only had one lawyer doing prosecutions, and that money had to be directed by the legislature. So I went back and said, look, we don't have enough people here. So I asked the legislature for more. Now we're up to four. Those people are full-time busy. They've got cases in front of the courts that now supposedly we can't bring. We're going to bring them anyway because we don't think they're right. We're going to keep bringing these cases, and we're going to keep investigating these cases because otherwise there is nobody to do this. And you'll notice other states don't do this. They don't have – the reason you hear there's no voter fraud is because guess what? Tell me another state that does what we're doing. Tell me another state that actually – do you think California is investigating voter fraud? No. Do you think New York is? Do you think even many Republican states are? So we are showing the world there is voter fraud, the narrative that there's no voter fraud. Second, we were involved during the election, prior to the election. We had 12 lawsuits in various counties, all liberal, Travis, Bear, Harris, where these local elected officials tried to override the law, what the legislature had put in place for mail-in ballots. And I was stunned at how many lawsuits we had in all these liberal counties, federal, state, and I looked back and I thought, again, genius. Right? Because there are 12 of them. And if you can imagine Harris County sending out 2.5 million mail-in ballots or Harris sending out over 1 million. And remember, we have liberal judges who basically agreed that that was fine to overrule the legislature. And then we have appeals courts that are going to say the same thing. So we have a tough road to hoe because we have to go through all of these courts and we can't win. We can't be 11-1. So I tell my team, we're going to get beat if we're 11-1, which is a good record, right? Or 10-2, it's a good record. It's not good enough. We have to be 12-0. And I told President Trump in May before the election, I said, I don't have time to worry about the rest of the country. I am fighting tooth and nail to save the elections here in Texas, because if we lose one of these, and Harris County sends out 2.5 million ballots, Trump won by 620,000 approximately votes. They would have been counting ballots just like they were in Georgia for 3 days. And the difference between Georgia and Texas 4 years ago was nothing. That we had the same margin of victory. The difference this time was that Georgia, instead of fighting, signed consent decrees, and their governor and their attorney general and their elections person all agreed to it, and we said, we're not doing that. We're going to fight it. And that was the difference. Otherwise, we would have been sitting there election night watching votes be counted in whatever county had won, whether it was Harris, Travis, and we would have lost Texas.
You filed a pretty high-profile lawsuit after that election, too, going after some of these swing states. Why do you think that was unsuccessful and the Supreme Court decided to not?
Look, I don't know. It makes no sense to me. The way the Constitution reads is this: if you're a state, everybody's supposed to have their day in court. And so normally what you either file in a state court or district court, federal district court, depending on whether you have jurisdiction in a federal court. Well, we have, since we're suing other states, that's two different states, so you have to file in federal court. When a state sues another state, not only do you have to file in federal court, you have to file in the U.S. Supreme Court because they don't want to give Texas an advantage by filing in a Texas court. So we did what we were required to do by the Constitution, but we never got our day in court. We never got to make our arguments. We were just told no standing. I don't know how it's possible that we cannot have standing in a case where would they have original jurisdiction and we have nowhere else to go. I mean, it's one thing if they'd heard the case and said, oh, you're wrong, you know, this is fine, you know, if Pennsylvania local officials want to change their laws and not go through the legislature and it affects the rest of the country, no problem with us. Mm-hmm. That's not what they said. They said no standing, which is hard for me to accept. And by the way, there were a couple other justices that thought we should have had standing. And by the way, mm-hmm. the state bar is trying to punish me right now, or at least investigating me because I filed that case, which is, I mean, first of all.
Talk about that a little bit, because that's an interesting situation right now.
Well, there's two problems with it. They're investigating me because they're saying that, I guess, that I misled the court. Well, their own rules provide that they do not have the authority to investigate that unless, if you file out of state, unless that court found a problem with you. Well, that court was the Supreme Court, and they found no problem with me. They didn't punish me or mm-hmm. fine me or sanction me. So they're violating their own rules. Second, it's a separation of powers issue. These were appointed people from the Texas Supreme Court. And so this would be like the Texas Supreme Court, through their appointments, overseeing another branch of government. Well, that's mm-hmm. a separation of power. I was elected by the people. I can file whatever lawsuits I think are in the best interest of the people. If they don't like that, they can elect me or not elect me based on my decisions. Mm-hmm. But it's not for another branch of government to come in and oversee. Now, because now what I would have to do is go get permission from the state bar. Are you guys okay with this? Mm-hmm. Are you okay with me filing these? Well, who is the state bar? They're not elected. They're elected by other lawyers, mm-hmm. but they're not elected by the entire state. Mm-hmm.
Child gender modification, big issue. James Younger story, we've seen that. Is that child abuse?
I think it is. And I think the legislature should have addressed it. They didn't. But I think that there should have been more focus on it. I know that there were bills floating around that never got out of committee. I don't know why that is, but if I could have passed a bill that would have provided greater protections and made the law more clear, mm-hmm. I would have done it.
Now, one of your former opponents, who's not in the race anymore, State Representative Matt Krause, said he wrote a letter several months ago, hasn't received a response.
So Matt doesn't understand the process or was using it for political purposes, because okay. the normal process is we take the same amount of time for all opinions. If you ask for expedited a process, you can get it. We're not, and our job is to be more like a judicial body. Mm-hmm. We're not a legislative body. We're not trying to make up law. We're trying to figure out what the law is so we can help guide people. So whatever the law is, it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we try to do, we're like a court. We try to take information from both sides. And mm-hmm. so that takes time. So we want to make sure, we don't want to come out with something really fast because we don't want to be wrong, right? We're giving guidance. Now, none of this is, you know, it could be persuasive in court, but it is not like a court.
Legally binding.
It's not a legally binding thing. So what he should have focused more on was, if he really wanted to expedite, he should have asked for it. He maybe didn't understand the process. Two, what he really needed to do was focus on getting something passed. That was really on the mm-hmm. legislature. It was on him. He failed to do that. That was, I think, a problem with his ability to get stuff done.
So under current law, then, with the legislature having not passed that bill, under current law, do you think it's allowed?
No, I still think it's child abuse.
Okay.
The question is, could the legislature better define what that is and provide penalties for mm-hmm. it?
Another big issue, probably one of the biggest issues that folks have been talking about, especially over the last year, has been the surge of immigration on the southern border. We've seen big cases in Del Rio and across the southern border of Texas. What, if anything, can the Office of the Attorney General be doing, and what are perhaps you doing already to try to push back on that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. When I ran the first time, one of my opponents suggested that he would arrest people for jaywalking. Well, mm-hmm. as we all know, the Attorney General doesn't have the authority to prosecute crimes
uh-huh.
unless it's voter fraud. So we're, I always tell people, the legislature didn't give me tanks and guns. They gave me mostly lawyers. Mm-hmm. So what we do is go to court, right? We go to court, we fight the Biden administration. We've sued the Biden administration 7 times over different immigration issues. We've sued them over building the wall. We've sued them over this Title 42 stuff where they aren't supposed to be letting in people with COVID and they're supposed to be testing them. We've sued them over the Remain in Mexico, which I already discussed. Mm-hmm. We've sued them over the deportations. We sued them over the public charge rule, which they're not supposed to let people in that are going to become basically a burden to society.
Right.
So we've sued them. We're in the various places with these lawsuits, but the one that's progressed the farthest, because the deportation one was moot after 100 days, because he said during the first 100 days, but is the Remain in Mexico. And we are just now seeing numbers after they've implemented, and that the numbers of people that they're actually pushing through the Remain in Mexico program are infinitesimally small relative to the number of people crossing. Mm-hmm. So even though the federal law says they have to do it, which is leave these people in Mexico until they have their hearing, because what effectively was happening was immigration lawyers were telling people, just come, claim asylum, you won't have your hearing for 2 or 3 years, disappear, and you'll be here forever. Well, Trump said, no, the law says we either have to detain them, which we don't have room for them all, mm-hmm. or you have to stay until your hearing in the other country, the country you came from. So they had to stay in Mexico. Well, Biden undid that, and we sued him and won, and the federal court said, this is the law, you have to follow it. And so far, from what we can tell, we had to go back and file a motion to enforce, because he still wasn't following court orders. So this is a president who, one, doesn't follow what Congress says, two, mm-hmm. doesn't follow what courts say, and three, he doesn't care what the states say. He's kind of one of these guys, I've never seen a president like him. Obama to some degree, but no one has gone to the lengths, I think, to avoid being accountable in the constitutional form of government that we have. Mm-hmm.
One of the complaints you hear sometimes from people is, especially with these big issues like COVID vaccine mandates or the border, is that they see lawsuits being filed, but it's often a slow process. Is there anything else? I mean, so many times people, I think, get frustrated when we just have to defer to the courts and wait for weeks or months for a decision.
Yeah, you know, democracy is a messy business.
And
instead of the founders, instead of having us go shoot each other, get it over with fast, created a judicial process where we would have our day in court. Mm-hmm. Now, apparently we don't always get that, but normally you get a day in court. And your day in court doesn't mean swift justice. I've experienced that personally. A lot of times it's not swift. It's much slower than it was designed to be. We have gotten injunctions at times relatively quickly. The problem we have is, does the administration really care about what a court says or what the Constitution says? They don't seem to really care about much of anything. And it concerns me because it makes me think they don't think they're accountable to anybody, including the voters. In other words, they don't even think they're going to lose the next election. In other words, they can ignore court orders. They can ignore all branches of government. They are not accountable to anybody. They are no different than, you know, the Chinese leaders, the Russian Putin, whoever you name. They're no different because they don't think they're any more accountable than some of these communist or dictatorships or monarchies. Mm-hmm. And it's a real concern to see a president literally spit in the face of federal law that Congress passed, that these people were elected, whether you like it or not, it's your job to implement that law. And if a court says, hey, this is the law, you need to follow it, and they still say, they still don't do it. Mm-hmm. So it is incredibly frustrating, but we're not gonna give up because it's the Constitution that we were given. And, you know, I still believe in it.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about some of these big issues. What are some of the smaller things that perhaps people don't realize that the Office of the Attorney General works on?
Well, I wouldn't call them small. I mean, we have so many, we do all the child support, 1.6 million cases a year. We collect over $4 billion. Mm-hmm. We represent every state agency. We're involved in massive litigation. We have over 30,000 cases going right now. So people come up to me all the time, hey, what about this case? So I'm like, I don't know every case we have. Mm-hmm. We have 38,000 right now. But we're involved in some very large litigation as it relates to, for instance, antitrust law. So we've sued Google, and that mm-hmm. case is not easy. It's a hard, long case because Google's a very tough competitor. I mean, they're like a country unto themselves. They have more money than most countries. And so, you know, that's a massive fight for us. We're looking into other technology companies and what they're doing. We're investigating some of what happened with the Parler instance where they deplatformed, and we see all this, it looks like some collusion between tech companies. So we're investigating that. We're investigating Facebook right now for, mm-hmm. for issues related to some of the things they've done. So there's a lot going on, mm-hmm. And most people have a small glimpse. Even like our law enforcement, you know, we're involved in tracking down child predators, and we're involved in, you know, I started a human trafficking division that mm-hmm. is, you know, I wish we had original jurisdiction there because we'd be prosecuting more human trafficking cases. That's one of the things I tried to get done and almost got done. Of course, the criminal court appeals say, oh, no, you can't do that. Uh-huh. But we have all kinds of things. I started a cold case unit. Now, it's very small. It's one person because I've noticed that around the state that a lot of these cases, local district attorneys, local law enforcement don't have the authority, sort of resources to look in, and they get stopped and they die, and then these families have no resolution mm-hmm. of potential murder cases. And so we've got one person, she's got a passion for it. Her job is to try to figure out how she can create a repository at the state where we can help maybe finish out some of these cases that have gone cold, and you know, they're unresolved, and people don't get any satisfaction and don't mm-hmm. get justice.
Let's switch a little bit here at the end to the campaign. Now, in the fall of 2020, you had seven whistleblowers from your office accuse you and some of the people in the office of illegal behavior. Some of your opponents say that's a disqualifying. What do you say?
I say, if they were going to accuse me of illegal behavior, they should have specified what it was. They never specified. Mm-hmm. They knew what they were doing. They just turned it over to, guess what, the FBI. Well, I was investigating the FBI for corruption. So it's kind of convenient. And I think clearly what happened, I can tell you, from we put out a report. My opponents have not either read it or don't care what it says. But that report talks about the FBI knowing about the investigation before I did. In other words, we got the referral from Travis County. I didn't create this issue. It was referred to me from Travis County, mm-hmm. a Democratic DA, and we started trying to look at it, and what it looks like is the FBI had already infiltrated my office and had already knew that they were being investigated, and they found a way to work with people in my office without me even knowing. And then suddenly I'm the one investigating them, and suddenly these guys complain. All they have to do is complain, not ever say what specifically, because mm-hmm. even today, this is a year and a half later, we don't know what the specific allegations are. No specific allegation, just you've done something wrong, now you're in trouble. And then everybody points to me as like, you've done something wrong. But I still to this day have no idea what crime I committed. I know that when you investigate the FBI, it appears that, you know, it can be turned on you. And it was. And these guys were involved in it. Mm-hmm.
You've got three other opponents in this race. Some people say it could potentially go to a runoff. Do you think you're headed to a runoff? Do you think, what's your strategy here going into the election?
Look, my strategy is to keep doing my job. This is a challenging job. I've learned a lot doing it. I feel like I know how to do it. We've had a lot of success, whether it's with human trafficking, shutting down the largest human trafficking company in the world, or whether it's child support, or the most successful in child support. Whatever measure you look at, going after the Biden administration, going after big tech, find me another attorney general's office that has produced more results in the country, or ever. We have been successful. We've won almost 92% of our cases against the Biden administration. We won over 80% against the Obama administration. We were successful in preventing the various thing that happened in these other states with elections. We have done our work. And so I will lay out to the voters, they're using personal attacks. They're not running on what they've accomplished. I mean, none of them are. None of them run on what they've accomplished. They run on finding little tweaks that they think I could have done better, but they have no experience doing the job. No one's going to do it perfectly, because it's impossible to know the future and know exactly what, if you've done it this way or done it this way. All I can say is, look at the 7-year track record. I don't know that anybody's done it better.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who want to follow your campaign, get involved, help you out, where can they go do that?
At Ken Paxton TX would be the Twitter and Facebook, and then kenpaxton.com is our email.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Uncut, a special edition of Conversations with Texas Scorecard. You can also go to texasscorecard.com to get more journalism and stories just like this. If you like today's episode, please rate and review this podcast on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.